This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Remember prosperity in the new American South? Factories opening, people moving down into the real estate boom? Fortunes may still be made there, but for many people, the system shows signs of eroding away. Robert Leslie is part of a team of artists, writers, and photographers who explored the underbelly of that dream. The result is called Storm Belt. It's a journey across the southern states. Robert Leslie, thank you for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm glad that you have seen the project and have interest in it.
So you're British and sort of Canadian. Why did you choose to chronicle the Great Strip from Miami to Los Angeles?
Well, it was somewhat unexpected. I'd spent through 2007, 2008, I'd done quite a few projects in China. Principally, the last thing I did was on a big, for a French museum of architecture, I did a project on the development of Chinese urbanization. Having had some exposure to the U.S. in the 70s, when I was based in Canada, I'd never been back over with a camera to take a look at it. So for me, it was an opportunity, fresh from seeing the development of the infrastructure of how China's being built up. I had a couple of months spare time, and everything just fell into place for me to go off and do this exploration to take a look at the world superpower, which, as I say, in the context of just coming from China, was quite astonishing to see what I saw.
We will get to the drought, the storms, and the natural signs, but let's start with the economy. What are some features you noticed in southern decline?
Well, I've done the journey twice. I started the day that Obama became president in Miami, and then I went back at the end of 2011. The initial first third of the trip was much more perspective on the economy because it was the height of the recession, particularly in Miami and throughout Florida, just the number of second homes that were all up for sale. There was an endless amount of holiday homes just completely like make us an offer. And then also going through shopping malls in the parking lots, seeing guys with signs in the entranceway that basically read, "We'll do anything for money." The other thing I kept seeing everywhere was sort of endless improvised yard sales or sales of household materials along the roadside being sold out of vans and such. It was pretty well relentless. There wasn't a day that I didn't see anything like that, that's for sure.
Well, let's move on to Texas. I know Dallas and Houston may do well, but what about rural Texas? What did you find there?
The thing that really struck me about Texas was the amount of abandoned materials. I could find boats in the middle of a field, cars, homes. You know, I had driven past a home, and I'm quite wary of laws about trespassing and all that type of thing. And there's a place that looked like it had been empty for years, and I just thought I'd poke around to take a quick look in it. And I was quite stunned because it's as if the family just got up and left, say, in 1983. There was an Apple computer sort of melted into the floorboards, one of the first Macintoshes. They were an extremely literary family. Amazing books of the children's books of the people who built America, other historical books of the story of America, and then all the father's suits all hanging up. And it was just strange to see that there was just this amount of abandonment. And I guess what I started to feel was that there was a real sense of like an abandonment of, I guess, the dream or the community or the hope. And I found this really ironic in light of my starting day was the day of Obama's inauguration, and I was in an amphitheater where there was a projection, and the room was just electric with hope and change and excitement. But walk a few blocks down the street in Miami, and then as I saw across the country, it was quite a different story than I saw.
It seems like we could measure the turning of the American South with every great storm. What about Mississippi and Louisiana? Do you feel they really recovered from Hurricane Katrina?
Well, it's interesting. I went back, like I say, the end of 2011, and I had the possibility to meet a few key people. There's a chap, Bill Stallworth, who was instrumental in the rebuilding of Biloxi. But then I'd also talk with people at shopping centers, galleries, streets, just to see how they viewed Katrina and its impact on New Orleans specifically. I was really kind of invigorated by the degree of zeal that people thought that it was actually going to be a good thing, that it was going to make it a stronger city, that it was going to make things more focused. not everybody had that opinion, but I was really quite surprised by the stubborn determination of people to try to say, okay, we're going to try to fix this up. And I really wasn't expecting that. I didn't see that everywhere. I saw an awful lot of decimated houses and towns that hadn't really been touched in the 4 or 5 years since Katrina. But the thing that left this unexpectedly positive impact on me was the conversations with people there.
But we know in the future, Robert Leslie, that the sea level will rise due to climate change and we'll have bigger storm surges. I kind of doubt Galveston can come back the way it was, or that Miami, that you mentioned, can survive the constant flooding of streets, which are still happening day to day. But what's your opinion of that?
It's funny. I think somewhere along the way I may have mentioned that I was connected with the TED organization, and they had a section called TED Fellows, and in there there's a great British researcher named Rachel Armstrong, and she's spent a lot of the last 5 years in Venice trying to come up with ecological systems that can help protect that city from being flooded annually. Yeah, we were aware with melting ice flows that coastal areas will be affected, and it's just strange to see. I always recall sort of histories of indigenous peoples in North and South America sort of avoiding coastal areas because of floods from running waters down the mountains, wiping out villages that might be on the seaside, or the impact of storms. So I think historically indigenous people have had experiences on how they develop things, but I think all of that was quite overlooked with the rush to modernization and packing as many beach and holiday homes on the coastlines as possible.
And on the other hand, we can hardly talk about Texas without the great drought that is almost permanent. In a video for this work, I saw a single cow lost in the grassless desert amongst the power transmission lines, and I had this awful vision that maybe the oil derricks and refineries will just go on even after nature fails.
Well, in the ebook version of the book, there's one, there's a couple of ghostly scenes, but one of them is just a single oil pump pumping with the sound of like a Harley-Davidson motorcycle engine rumbling. Now, the location of that pump was where the storms Ike and Gustav hit it in late 2008 that totally decimated, eliminated all residential areas, schools, shops, everything. And the only things remaining were the oil pumps. So I think that illustrates a bit what you said right there.
Well, Stormbelt is multimedia. There are searing photos, recordings of people met, and some text about what it all means. Tell us about your co-contributors, would you?
Well, there's the great Canadian environmental landscape photographer, Edward Vertinsky, and a British chap named Cameron Sinclair, who founded something called Architecture for Humanity. I was always aware of Ed's work as a photographer in the same field, but we all got to know each other around 2005-06 through the TED conferences. Both Ed and Cameron were recipients of the TED Prize for the work that they'd done more or less for humanity, and were given a choice to give a wish to implement something in the future. We just found it kind of funny that we'd find each other at different parts of the world several times a year and just had sort of a convergence of thought on sort of where society and the environment was going. And basically, I think the three of us share a desire to bring about change through a type of education. One thing I'm really hoping with the Stormbelt Project is that, well, ironically enough, an old school friend of mine from Canada where I grew up is now a school teacher in Ontario, and she's been using it in some of her classes to stimulate discussion about environmental respect and then other implications of the socioeconomic impact of the choices related to the environment.
You know, it would be great to take this work back to China and say, look, this is where this road goes. Literally, this road goes. Don't go there.
Yeah, well, as with the beach homes, there's this rush to modernize everything, and it doesn't matter if the technologies are beneficial. If they're technologies that have worked for centuries, it's the easiest. It seems to be easier to implement than to turn over a new stone and come about with a different approach. I am kind of curious about going back to China, and I've had, back when I first started working on the book, I had different input of people saying that I should make this sort of A-B comparison over, like, let's say, investment at the beginning of the 21st century in China versus lack of investment in the U.S., it's all quite political, but I just wanted to stick to the U.S. because I had a much more singular vision in terms of how I was approaching things there. But you're right, you know, the situation with pollution, I've been in China several times, and it's quite shocking in terms of what's happening environmentally.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Robert Leslie, lead author of a new book on the decline of the American South called Storm Belt. Robert, I've got to say, we could tour two different Americas. I'll bet I could cruise through the right circles and find incredible wealth and creativity in the southern states. California is one of the world's biggest economies, and Texas is no slouch. Why do you focus on the negative? Do you think decline is greater than wealth now in America?
Well, I found myself asking this question. I wasn't really seeking out all this stuff. I basically had a rough itinerary of locations I wanted to go to. I didn't want to take any big interstate highways. I wanted to take smaller rural routes. And I suppose psychologically, having the radio on the whole time, listening to the meltdown of General Motors, all of the environmental situations that were going on, but particularly a lot of the stuff about the economy that I was hearing just as Obama was coming in, was, I suppose, affecting my mood and temperament as I went along. And I guess the thing that I felt the further I went was that there seemed to be a real breakdown of a collective community towards trying to make change. You know, a lot of the small shops that were all there through the 50s and 60s run by mom and dad had all been closed up because of the arrival of super malls, which all of those were closing up because the infrastructure to support them wasn't there anymore. And the end result was that you have a lot of disenfranchised families and youth and families running around that are not being able to use their energies the right way. So I wasn't actively seeking out to document negative stuff. I just found it so overwhelming to find it in so many different ways.
When I drove through the southern states last, I felt the militarization of society. You see lots of guns, plenty of flags, and big bases overflowing with people in uniforms. Did you notice that as well?
Yeah, particularly the area. I actually stayed after I left Miami, I drove up through Tampa, and I stayed with Chris Morris, who's the Time photographer who was covering the White House, and he'd just come from shooting the inauguration. And he's very familiar with the whole Gulf Coast area, and he'd done a few road trips down through there. He's with the agency 7. And we had a long talk about basically the industries down there, and a lot of the prime property locations are owned by the military, and consequently there was a stretch of land that seemed to go for 100 miles that was just continual sort of strip malls that basically supported the people that were working in the military installations. I'd had other situations, too, that I'd go in a couple of times. I had to get new rechargeable batteries for my cameras and stuff, so I'd look for the largest Walmart I could because I figured they'd have the largest inventory of specific pieces that I needed. And in every Walmart, there was a McDonald's, and I'd go into McDonald's because you get free Wi-Fi. And in every McDonald's through the Gulf Coast area there, they'd all have a TV station on, and they would only all be on Fox TV. And I thought that's kind of interesting that if anyone gets exposure to a McDonald's, it's only one sort of media outlet saying one story the whole time. And it seemed to be a unified theme throughout all of the locations I went through the South.
Interesting. Well, it's corporate TV. Well, getting down to it, Robert Leslie, why did you call this multimedia work Storm Belt?
Well, the name was given to me. There was a British chap named Chris Boot, who was a very successful photography book publisher in the UK, and then he was asked to join the Aperture Foundation in New York. And Aperture is essentially the most important, prestigious organization in the U.S. for photography. And he was kind of brought in as a consultant on making the multimedia book. And we'd had different titles, and we ran through a lot of different things to do with the Empire, things to do with United, and other things to do with kind of like the loneliness of the long-distance tribe. And then he came out with this word, Storm Belt, out of the blue. And we tried it with other words before and ahead of it, but it just seemed to fit because it was actually Ed Bertinsky who gave me the history of the projections of the Sun Belt, how it was predicted to be the growth area for housing, military, agriculture. And there's been an awful lot of work done, photographically at least, on the decline of the industry of the northern U.S., the Rust Belt. But this was kind of the first kind of comprehensive view of the Sun Belt, which, you know, the Rust Belt was the 1800s and 1900s, and the Sun Belt, and I say the Rust Belt is the previous centuries, the Sun Belt was supposed to be the future centuries.
I'm not sure if you know this, Robert, but some Americans don't take kindly to criticism, especially from foreigners. Do you expect some flames and pushback? Or maybe just self-recognition?
I know. It's kind of like I said, I didn't set out to... This is quite a long tale I could deviate into with this one. I didn't set out to offend people, and I didn't set out to make it as a public book. It was kind of like just a personal observation. It just happens that a few of my friends are very well established in the photography world, and they said, well, you know, this is like a story that should be shown. And, you know, the directors of New York Times Magazine and Time Magazine and stuff, they've all seen the work, and I've only had encouragement from those aspects. I do understand that in other parts of society, people will be against it. One kind of very ironic thing is that in the course of being over there on the last journey, I was looking at, let's say, immigrating to the U.S., and I ended up staying one day too long in a year, so I was out for a year and a half, but in that time I applied for an immigration visa, and now I've been granted status as an artist of outstanding merit, exceptional ability to be a full-time resident in the U.S. So we're going to see how that one pans out over the next 12 months.
How do people get the book and the other files that support it?
Initially last year I put out the iTunes version of Stormbelt, which is available on the iTunes stores. It does only work on Apple devices, which would be the iPod or the iPhone and iPad. The print book has now just been released through the British publisher Dowie Lewis. It's going to be available in North America, I think, in late January. It's already available in Europe right now. I think it can be ordered online. And I am looking at doing a version digitally on the Kindle, too, for that kind of device. So I'll have to sort of check to see what possibilities there are for that.
Is there a website for it?
Yes, there's www.storm-belt.com. It's quite simplistic. It has some aspects of the book, excerpts from the essays by Cameron and Ed, a selection of pictures, and a few links to different things on it.
It's pretty moving stuff. The book is out in Britain, Stormbelt, and it's coming soon in America. They say images speak louder than words. These ones shout about the way things are going in the southern states, I think. Robert Lessie, thank you for talking with us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Alex. Thanks.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. You can find more links in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info. We can only lie to ourselves so long. It's been a fib fest of climate denial and economic black magic. When reality strikes, our confidence-building scripts won't cut it. We become part of nature or fail and fall. What is your decision? I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening. Grab our past programs free at the website, ecoshock.org. Find more links in the weekly show blog at ecoshock.info. Please tune in again next week for more Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.